red-winged blackbird. But it's a wren, a very large one, called the cactus wren. Most wrens in North America are small, furtive birds that stay deep in the vegetation. The bold, brassy cactus wren is the northernmost species of a group of tropical wrens, all big wrens with complex social behavior. You might see a whole family group of cactus wrens foraging together in search of large insects and cactus fruits. These wrens are well adapted to the desert and can get all the moisture they need from their food. Cactus wrens are a regular sight in their range of dry habitats from West Texas to California. The nest looks like a football made of twigs stuck horizontally in a thorny tree or cholla cactus. The nest is easily seen, but well guarded by the spiky vegetation. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Pacific Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, Professor Alfred Zayas, a leading UN independent expert on international order and law, says Trump's proposed depopulation of Gaza to turn it into a French Riviera of the Middle East is ethnic cleansing and very illegal. And in the second half of today's show, Flashpoint senior producer Miguel Gavilán Molina will be live for us in Santa Rosa, California, where undocumented students and their supporters are taking their fight against Trump's racist crackdown and threat of mass deportation to the local Board of Education to demand that they keep all its schools open and that it also ensures the Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement agents stay off all school district campuses. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. Well, Trump doubled down this week on his vows to turn Gaza into a Riviera in the Middle East and empty the population of Gaza permanently of more than 2 million Palestinians that live there now, saying also they would not be allowed to return and that this Riviera in the Middle East would be a good thing for all the other people, I guess, who live there. Joining us to talk about this situation and the implications is Professor Alfred de Zayas. He is a law professor at the Geneva School of Diplomacy and served as a UN independent expert on international order from 2012 to 2018. He is the author of 10 books, including Building a Just World Order. Zayas said, recently, this the most relevant hard law regarding permanent resettlement and displacement is the Statute of Rome. Well, Professor, welcome to Flashpoints. Why don't you give us a little background, including the Statute of Rome, and why this might be illegal under international law?
Good morning, Dennis, and good morning, Frank, and all listeners. Yes, we are facing a situation, what I would like to call an open rebellion against international law, against the United Nations Charter, against jus cogens and erga omnes principles like the right of self-determination of peoples. Certainly, the International Court of Justice has repeatedly affirmed the right of self-determination of peoples as jus cogens, and specifically with regard to the Palestinian population, the last advisory opinion of the International Court of Justice was issued on the 19th of July, 2024. And as you know, the issue is being dealt with in the International Court of Justice in the case South Africa against Israel under the rubric genocide. The case came to the ICJ through a complaint brought by South Africa pursuant to Article 9 of the Genocide Convention of 1948, which allows cases concerning the interpretation of the Genocide Convention to go directly to the International Court of Justice. That's why it's there, and 11 countries have joined South Africa. I have read the initial submission by South Africa. I have read the 75-page memorial that they subsequently submitted. I have read part of the annexes they just submitted, over 4,000 pages. Of course, I cannot read everything, but as the case may be, it is extremely, extremely well argued, and the evidence is there. So there's no question that the International Court of Justice will have to find, whenever it issues its judgment, that here the crime of genocide has been committed. But we started the discussion a couple of moments ago with regard to this rather abstruse proposal of Donald Trump that goes back to Kushner's idea 5 years ago of making indeed a Riviera out of Gaza. Of course, Gaza has a potential to be a fantastic resort for the oligarchs of Israel and the United States and the rest of the world. How about the native population of Gaza? As in 2.5 million people. I mean, obviously, they have a link to the earth. They have a link to the ground, and they're not going to leave. Huh? If Trump intends to come in with the U.S. Army and occupy the territory, I don't think that's going to lead to anything but more bloodshed. And Trump seems to want to use the narrative that he wants peace. Well, I'm not so sure that he wants peace. He just wants, in his megalomaniac way, to do certain things and to be a show-off. But these are human lives. And as far as international law is concerned, already at the time of the Second World War, when the Germans expelled 800,000 Poles from an area that they annexed called the Wartegau, and they also expelled 100,000 Frenchmen from Alsace and Lorraine. Well, that was considered in the indictment of the Nuremberg Tribunal and in the judgment of the Nuremberg Tribunal to constitute both war crimes and crimes against humanity. You cannot expel the native population for whatever reason. Now, Article 49 of the 1949 Geneva Red Cross Convention. United States is a state party. Palestine is a state party. Israel is a state party, specifically prohibits expelling the native population and explicitly prohibits bringing in your settlers. And once you've occupied a territory, your obligation as an occupying power is to ensure the welfare of the population that you have subjected to a military regime. But you cannot massacre them. You cannot expel them. I mean, that's specifically prohibited in the Geneva Convention of 1949, also in the Additional Protocols of 77, and in Articles 7 and 8 of the Statute of Rome. I mean, that is the statute of the International Criminal Tribunal. Article 7 is crimes against humanity. Article 8 is war crimes. So specifically, this crime of transferring, forcibly transferring population is prohibited. In the Encyclopedia of Public International Law, published by Oxford University, this is a 10-volume set. In volume 4, you have my article, Forced Population Transfers, which dissects the phenomenon and gives you plenty of examples where it's been found to be contrary to international law. And as I told you earlier, this was my very first article when I was somewhat younger, and this was published in April of 1975. So it's going to be 50 years that I published this in the Harvard International Law Journal, the article that has been rather seminal. It's been translated into various languages, including German and Spanish, etc. Here you have it. International law and mass population transfers is a matter that there's no discussion about it. It is illegal, period. Not only is it illegal, it is criminal. And it just pains me to see my president, to see Donald Trump doubling down on something that is a no-brainer, something that is a non-starter. You can't do it. And it's all going to bring even more suffering to the people in the Middle East. Now,
let me jump in here for a second and let people know, Professor, we're speaking with Alfred de Zayas. He is a law professor at the Geneva School of Diplomacy and served as a UN independent expert on international order from 212 to 218. We're speaking to him in Geneva. And Professor, one of the things I guess you could say Trump tripled down on is not only does he want the people out, but he says, while it is going to be a wonderful place for the people of the region, the Palestinians are not going to be allowed to return. Does that essentially underline the criminal nature of what he's doing?
Well, as I told you, it's a rebellion against international law and against international order. It is amazing with what aplomb he says that. There is another American president whom, unlike Donald Trump, another president whom I do admire, who recently passed away, Jimmy Carter. Here is Jimmy Carter's book, We Can Have Peace in the Holy Land. And I had the opportunity of discussing that with Jimmy Carter back in 2015 when he invited me for a week to a series of conferences at the Carter Center. He also published the famous book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid. That was published in 2006. A wonderful book with a blueprint for peace in the Middle East. It would have worked if there had been good faith. Unfortunately, good faith is a rare commodity. And notwithstanding everything that Trump says that he wants to distance himself from the interventionists like Obama and Joe Biden, who bring the United States into wars that are counterproductive. What is he doing? I mean, if he wants peace, he's not going to get it by expelling 2.5 million people from their homelands. There is in international law what we call the right to the homeland. Now, the right to the homeland is prior to and superior to the right of self-determination. Obviously, if the right of self-determination has been considered to be not only hard law, but the hardest type of law, what we call jus cogens, binding international law. If the right of self-determination is binding international law, how are you going to exercise self-determination if you are denied the right to the homeland, if you are no longer in your homeland? So you cannot exercise self-determination. So this, as I said earlier, is a non-starter. On the other hand, Trump does not let himself be discouraged by non-starting ideas. I mean, the Middle East has rejected it. The Arab League has rejected it. Saudi Arabia has rejected it. Egypt has rejected it. The United Nations has rejected it. Antonio Guterres, our Secretary General, has already rejected it. But Trump doesn't listen. Trump has his idée fixe, and he wants to do things his way. Now, there's a great Israeli scholar called Ilan Pappe. Ilan Pappe wrote a book on the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. And more recently, he wrote this book in French, Israel, la propagande. On the propaganda campaigns and the public relations machinery that is behind the narrative that we hear in the New York Times, in the Washington Post, and CNN, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Ilan Pappe, as I said, is an Israeli historian teaching today at Exeter University in England, close to London. And in any event, he is someone you can believe, someone you can rely on. Another great scholar who's written on it quite a bit is my friend Jeffrey Sachs from Columbia University. Yet another scholar who's written on Gaza is, of course, Norman Finkelstein. But Norman Finkelstein has been so defamed and so attacked that many people do not want to read his books, although his book Gaza is the best that you can get. It was published by University of California Press back in 2019. Norman has been giving any number of speeches at Oxford, at Cambridge, at so many universities, and he's quite a convincing fellow. But if you have the mainstream media against you, you don't make much headway. This is a phenomenon. There are books without follow-up. You write a book that actually gives all the answers and tells you what the situation is, but they don't want to follow up on that. They don't want to implement what Jimmy Carter is saying in Palestine, peace, not apartheid. They don't want to implement what Ilan Pappe says. They don't want to implement what Jeffrey Sachs says. So here you have books without consequences, and you also have facts without consequences, because you cannot get away from the fact that at least 50,000 Palestinians have been killed. You cannot get away from the fact that there is complicity also by the Israeli defense forces with the implementation of the Hannibal strategy. You know what the Hannibal strategy is, to kill even your own so that they don't fall into captivity. They don't
right, kill your, that was a part of the initial sort of encounters on October, in October. Professor, I want to ask you sort of a more general question. We have heard a lot. You've talked about it some. There have been a number of international actions, judgments brought against the Israelis. At this point, do Israelis, can Israeli soldiers travel freely around the world? Is Netanyahu, can he be arrested based on the international legal action that's already been taken? Well, how does this change the nature of being an Israeli citizen if that country has been singled out as violating various aspects of international law?
Well, an Israeli citizen has nothing to fear but his own government. A member of the Israeli Defense Forces, if there is evidence that that person has committed war crimes, then under the general principle of universal jurisdiction, he could be arrested in any country and tried in any country. For instance, Sweden, Germany, Austria, they have all invoked universal jurisdiction to try Syrians, to try Iranians for crimes committed in their countries. So if you enter the territorial jurisdiction of a country, if there is information that you may have committed torture, for instance, then the country can arrest you or not. It's a question of discernment. It's a question. It's a political question. With regard to Netanyahu, it's different. With that, you have an arrest warrant. Now, all countries that have ratified the Statute of Rome are obliged to arrest this person and to transfer him to trial in The Hague if that person enters their territorial jurisdiction. The United States is not a state party to the Statute of Rome, so the United States is not obliged to arrest Netanyahu and send him to The Hague. That's why Netanyahu could come and meet Donald Trump in the White House and use the photo opportunity to look good vis-a-vis his own people. So, and it's not only Netanyahu, of course, his former defense minister, who is also under an arrest warrant. But the same applies, say, for instance, with regard to Vladimir Putin. The court issued also an arrest warrant against Vladimir Putin in connection with the war in Ukraine. Now, Vladimir Putin has been very careful not to go to countries that are states parties to the Statute of Rome, including South Africa. So South Africa, when it had its big meeting, if I remember, was it the BRICS meeting or the G20 meeting? Putin sent his Secretary of State Sergei Lavrov to represent him. He didn't go personally because he didn't want to put South Africa in the difficult situation of either arresting him, or if not arresting him, violating its obligations under the Statute of Rome. So this is a tricky issue. Generally, the principle of universal jurisdiction should allow any country to arrest anyone suspected of having committed war crimes or crimes against humanity, but we don't have enough case law on it. States are careful arresting foreign officials, because that, of course, has a huge political fallout. And you don't want to be then subject to sanctions or to disagreeable situations. Now, I would like to see the office that I served for 40 years, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, take a more forthright position with regard to Gaza. And my former colleagues, the rapporteurs, did issue an important media statement condemning Trump's idea of transferring the native population of Gaza out of their homelands. Now, the media statements, the press releases of the special rapporteurs and UN independent experts don't have much of an impact unless the mainstream media pick them up, unless Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch and all the major NGOs pick it up and actually make an issue out of it. I mean, I don't see tens of thousands of people going out on the streets and protesting against Trump for the idea of expelling the Palestinians from their homeland. I don't see that happening in Washington or in Chicago or in New York or in San Francisco. I don't see it happening in Paris or in Berlin or in Frankfurt or in London. So we have a problem of perception. We kind of tolerate the war crimes, crimes against humanity, genocide committed by Israel, but we do not tolerate the crimes against humanity and genocide committed either by, say, the Iranians or the Syrians under Assad, et cetera, et cetera. So there's it's a problem of double standards. And I deal with that in this book of mine, The Human Rights Industry. There I have a chapter on the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, on the Human Rights Council, on the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, on the International Criminal Court, and said, I mean, all of these bodies, their authority, their credibility depends on their professionalism, on their objectivity, on their neutrality. The moment that we start using double standards, nobody believes on us anymore. And that is actually a crisis of our time, because there's a lot of trust that used to be placed in the United Nations system. That's not there anymore. People are skeptical about the United Nations. People are cynical about the United Nations. And I regret it, because I've devoted most of my life to this organization. And I do believe in the United Nations Charter as the only world constitution that we have. I do believe in the spirituality of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I do believe if you want to make America great again, and I would like to explain, we would like to make America loved. We would like to make America respected. We would like to make America looked up to. There's one easy way: revive the legacy of Eleanor Roosevelt. Revive all the good things that Eleanor Roosevelt and René Cassin and C.P. Chang and Charles Malik were doing at the Commission of Human Rights in 1946 and 47 and 48 and 49, etc. This was a period in which America launched the Marshall Plan, when America was doing good things in the world, and for that reason, America was respected, even loved. I would like to have that today. But you're not going to be loved by being a bully. And I'm afraid that Trump sees greatness as just being a bully. And that reminds me of a Roman emperor with the funny name Caligula. And you know what his motto was? His motto was, "Oderint dum metuant." Let them hate me as long as they fear me.
Yes.
Oderint dum metuant. Isn't that stupid? Instead of wanting to be respected because you inspire respect, because people believe in you. I mean, Trump just wants to give orders. He just wants to bully people. And you're not going to make friends. I mean, he's going to lose Latin America. He's going to lose Africa. He's going to lose Asia. And he's going to find himself isolated. And of course, serves him right. On the other hand, he's damaging the image of the United States. I'm not saying that it would have been much better with Kamala Harris. I will confess to you that I did not vote Trump. I did not vote Kamala. I voted Dr. Jill Stein. And I'm proud of it. Even if she did not even get 1% of the vote. But
Professor,
I think Jill Stein had the right ideas.
That's amazing, Professor. And listen, we're out of time, but we really appreciate you taking the time out to be with us. I hope we can come back and consult with you again and get your feedback, because this ain't going away. Not only are we losing our human rights, but I'm not sure I have Social Security anymore, because there's a billionaire in there checking out the files to see if he wants to squeeze it. But anyway, a final comment would you like to make before we have to say goodbye?
Well, in any event, keep fighting. You know, go out on the streets, demand your rights, reclaim your democracy. That's why we are Americans. I mean, we should not simply put up with the crap. I mean, it is our good right to protest. It's a good right to go out on the streets, as I did back in the 1960s and 70s against the Vietnam War. I'd like to see masses and masses of Americans on the streets demanding real peace, peace with justice in Palestine and in Ukraine. Thanks.
Thank you, Professor. Please have a beautiful day, and we will talk to you soon. Take care now.
Thanks again.
I'm getting ready to fly. I'm superhuman, I'm supernova. I burn the candle both sides. Your force is coursing right through my body. I feel the temperature rise. I only want this, this hallelujah, for the rest of my life. You keep me up. If love is wanting, open 7 days of the week. Your life is constant, it's never stopping. Just take a second and breathe. I'm standing.
ability to fly. I'm superhuman, I'm supernova. I find the candle both sides. Hallelujah, hallelujah.
Yeah. Obung Gaya. Not in surrender. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, we go to the field now. We're joined by our senior producer, Miguel Gavilan Molina. Miguel is a senior producer on Flashpoints. He is the co-creator of La Onda Bajita. We work together on the project we call Flash Onda, where we combine the crews and we go out and monitor the centers of power and report back to you all, to the people. Gavilan, I think you're in Santa Rosa now. Where are you?
I'm here, Dennis, at the Santa Rosa High School. They're having a gathering here at the auditorium, and people are just starting to arrive. Bitter cold and a drizzle in the rain, but it's not stopping people. And one of the things that I've, you know, just talking to folks here in the last, 15, 20 minutes, is they're very concerned about school closures, but also about, ICE and military police showing up. So that's what this gathering is here tonight. And I have one of the organizers, person that's organizing this, and her name is Lotus, and she's helped organize this event. I'm going to pass the phone to her right now, Dennis, and you'll get a whole idea of the agenda for tonight. Lotus?
All right.
Hello?
Hello, welcome to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Could you tell us your name and just tell us a little bit about what brings you out there tonight in that terrible weather?
Yeah, well, my name is Lauritine Bartley. My pronouns are they, them, ella. And today I'm out here to support the youth because it's really important that we uplift our youth to make sure that we stand by them, that we support them with their voices, and understanding that what is happening to them, you know, we see it, we recognize it, and we want to make sure that they know that we're here to support them on their journey and letting them know that their voices are important and it is one of the most important parts of the lucha. And with this, you know, we have students that are going to be making public comment, both English and in Spanish, to make it language inclusive for everyone to understand. You know, we have students that are coming from Santa Rosa High School, Pioneer High School, Elsie Allen, Montgomery High School, and we just want to make sure that we get a whole diverse of students and students that come from different backgrounds of education and different high schools. And you know, we're just here to support and uplift, and again, like I said, just to make sure that they know that we stand by them, we're with them, and that we see them.
Can I ask you to talk a little bit about how this is really impacting at the grassroots level, the kinds of fears that are being expressed to you? What are the concerns? Help us really keep a human face on this.
Yeah, well, so many of the kids take are low income, and many of them have to take public transportation, and if their school ends up being closed down and they end up having to go across town and that transportation doesn't take them, this goes into rates of brown and black and indigenous students not being able to graduate high school, not being able to continue their education, you know. And we have seen consistently of how black and brown and indigenous folks have, you know, have always had the hardest time of accessing equal levels of education. And it's not just about transportation, but it's also about, you know, belonging. Many of these different schools like Elsie Allen have been able to prove of being able to have a really good effort of having a marching band or having a sustainable ethnic studies education. And with these schools being closed down and them being moved, it not only impacts them socially, but also their education, how they learn and what they get to learn. And, you know, on that point of view, it just makes more kids feel isolated, and like I said, it creates a really big dynamic of potential and more, you know, students dropping out. And of course, it will be affecting many Black and Brown Indigenous youth.
We're hearing a lot of reports and a lot of fears around authorities coming right into the schools. I understand where you are, Northern California here, Santa Rosa, north of San Francisco. Part of why people are out here and part of the demands are to that they keep the schools open and that also, no immigration, customs, and enforcement agents allowed onto the school district campuses. Is that important to you? What is that like? Have the school systems, is the school system amenable to that? Have they taken that action?
Yeah, so immigration and students, it is a really big important part. Many of our different youth are either migrant folks or as they consider them as newcomers who have recently just migrated here to the States. So it is really important that we make sure that our schools are up to date. Thankfully, within Santa Rosa City Schools, they recently updated their safe haven policy, which gives a little bit more security for students that go onto campus of Santa Rosa City School District campuses. But again, it's also really important that, you know, we also fully hear the fears, you know, that students may be having, you know, specifically because even our own county is not even sanctuary, you know, so we may have a safe haven here within the Santa Rosa City School Districts, but our county is still not considered as a sanctuary space.
And have there been meetings? Are there structures being created, places where people can get information? Are there instruction bulletins being created or workshops in terms of dealing with officialdom, the police, authorities?
Yeah, right now here in Sonoma County and in many different places as well, collectively we have been working with what is called the Rapid Response Network, which is a hotline that you can call to report any type of ICE sightings. So, you know, we have that of, you know, you report to a dispatcher, you let them know, a legal observer goes out to that specific place that was said of where there was possible ICE. They see it, they record it. You know, right now there are also trainings of knowing your rights. People in the community have been going around to different areas. So here in Sonoma County, we have the Rosen area, which is predominantly brown Latina folk, where people are going to different businesses or going on the street and handing out the red cards, which are knowing your rights, and the yellow cards, which are reporting ICE, which is the Rapid Response Network.
Well, that I bet that's helpful and encouraging to a lot of people who can use the support. I'm sure there's a lot of fear, and that kind of work that you're describing is incredibly important. We thank you very much for taking the time out. Maybe you can pass the phone back to Gavilan Miguel, and let us really appreciate you joining us on Flashpoints. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're absolutely welcome. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. Our senior producer, Miguel Gavilan Molina, is in Santa Rosa, California. That's north of where we're broadcasting from tonight in San Francisco. They are. And there's a lot of activity, there are a lot of fears, and there's a lot of fight back. There's a lot of spirit in the resistance.
Absolutely.
Gavilan, what's going on?
Well, Dennis, people are arriving, and, you know, I'm talking to folks and talking to people, and it's just amazing how the youth are coming together. And basically, in this area, it looks like that they're the voices of the opposition to the unconstitutional, you know, bigotry and racism coming out of the dictator's, you know, presidency. But that said, I have a young man here. His name is Bo. And he's actually one of the organizers freshman in high school, and he organized a group called Raices Collective. That's Roots Collective, and he's here right now. And Bo, I'm going to pass you the phone, and my executive producer Dennis will be talking to you. Dennis, I'm going to pass the phone on to Bo, and he's ready to go.
Thank you. And hello? Welcome, Bo. Welcome to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. It's really great to have you with us. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you are where you are, what you're doing tonight. Tell us all about that.
Okay. My name is Bo Brown. I'm a ninth grader. I'm with the Raices Collective Safety and Belonging Cohort. I go to Pioneer High School in Santa Rosa. I'm here today because I want to make a change. I want to help people who need help.
Do you know people who are afraid? Do people talk about being afraid? Or are they sort of acting differently because they're afraid?
I feel people are trying to be strong right now, trying to act strong. No, but I feel that they really are scared, and I want to help them. So I'm trying to do whatever I can do to, you know, help.
I'm wondering, are there like information workshops for folks in the ninth grade your age? Is there organizing to work with young people and to help them work with their families?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
I'm wondering if there are any kinds of workshops or classes or our teachers and students working together to sort of be safer, take care of each other, you know, so understand who to talk to, who not to talk to.
There's plenty of people here who help each other out. They talk to each other about what's going on, try to, you know, make plans. Just the other day, people did a walkout, No Immigrant Day, where students and the parents didn't go to work or schools to show their concern and protest, showing what it's like without them.
If you had a few minutes with the President of the United States at the moment, Donald Trump, what would you want to tell him? You think you'd have something to tell him?
Yes. I mean, I would have a lot of questions for him. My main one being, why do you hate? What's the point of hating? Is there a benefit? I don't see a benefit. You know, it's sad that he does what he does, and I hope there's a change.
Why do you hate? Oh boy, that's the big question. There's a lot of rage. You must feel a lot of that coming from the President of the United States. He does seem to be a very angry, hurtful human being, based on what's going on. So I guess you think he'd listen to you? You think he can listen?
I mean, I would hope he would listen, but there's never really a way to find out.
Yeah.
But...
Well, yeah, well, go on.
Oh, no, nothing.
All right, I appreciate you talking with us, being on the radio with us, and very good advice for the President of the United States. Why hate? No productive thing there. No help from that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Be safe.
Thank you so much.
I'll give it back to Gabi Long, Miguel.
Okay.
Thank you.
Real quick, a message to all those listening out there, please stay safe. My love and support goes out to you guys. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you.
All right.
And who do we have now? Who's there? Who's with us?
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like there's a lot going on in the background. What's going on?
Yeah, people are just speaking their mind right now. Yeah. 1 second. All right.
We're listening to Flashpoints. This is an action taking place in Sonoma County. Yeah, Gavilan. What's going on?
To me. They're yes. getting people, students are rallying, chanting, carrying posters, and the auditoriums are getting to fill up, and the students are outside, you know, chanting and rallying people, and basically, you know, let the students live, let education live, let the future live. And, you know, people
let's
are
listen
rallying.
To the chants a little bit, Gavilan. Let's why don't you walk into the chanters. Let's
I'm sorry,
listen
Dennis.
A little bit. Why don't you go
I
into the let's listen
that.
Oh
you want to listen to it?
Okay. Yeah, let's wait in there and listen. Let's be there.
There's a young woman that wants to read a statement. I'm going to go so you can hear it.
Okay, perfect. Live radio, Flashpoints, Pacifica Radio, KPFA. Gavilan, Miguel Gavilan Molina on site in a protest at Santa Rosa School Board of Education.
Okay, there's a little, you know what, there's a young girl here that has a statement she would like to read, Dennis. She's not, okay. you know, ready to be interviewed, but she has a statement, and it's important that it be heard. So, Kira.
Okay, let's hear it. Sure.
Her name is Kira, and she's going to read this statement, Dennis.
Okay.
I'm Kira. I don't support ICE raiding schools, potentially. I live in Southwest Santa Rosa, and I'm here to support my school. I and other students might have nowhere to go without LCL in.
Dennis?
Yes,
Dennis?
We're listening. Yes.
Yeah, she just wanted to read that statement. She's a little shy and afraid. People are afraid. I mean, I've seen some
fear
of the kids
is
here.
The,
you know, they're talking, and then they say, well, is anybody hearing? Will they come to my house? I mean, these are real things that kids are saying. You know, the young woman that just spoke that statement, two of her friends haven't been to school for the last 3 weeks because they're afraid. You know, I mean, there's a real, real fear, and it's real, it's human. But the nice thing about this, Dennis, tonight is it's just not, you know, just brown folks. There's all kinds of folks coming, African-American. There's a lot of, you know, progressive white folks that have come. You know, so they're beginning to realize, and one guy said, hey, man, immigrant labor is important. It's part of the workforce. And that's something I think you and I have been saying for quite some time. Yeah, immigrant, they have been targeted, but they're basically 30% of the workforce and are doing the most dangerous and essential work. But tonight is a beginning for some of these young students. Some of them, it's the first time they've done any kind of action like this. So they're a little nervous. But there is someone here that I think needs to be heard. And he's one of the organizers here to help put this thing together here. His name is Chad, and I've seen him the last few years in different things that we've attended, gone. I'm going to pass the phone over to Chad. And, yeah, Dennis, I'm passing the phone now.
I got it.
Hey, how you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing okay. How are you tonight? And what brings you out there? What's at the heart of the matter?
So we are at the school board meeting, which they're to announce which schools are going to be closing here in Santa Rosa, but I'm working with a group of students that have been running a campaign to keep their schools safe from having SROs, school resource officers, aka cops, on campus, and more recently, due to the new administration, ICE. So they're kind of, it's kind of a two-pronged campaign now. It's keep ICE and cops off campus and keep their schools open.
Have there been ICE, or have there been law enforcement on campus? We know there's been a lot of fear about that. What do we know about where that is right now?
So in Santa Rosa, there has not been any cops or any ICE on campuses, any ICE raids in Sonoma County that we know of yet. There is a rapid response network here that's been organized by North Bay Organizing Project. It's been keeping an eye out, and it's the structure is getting stronger and going. So, but as of today, there's been no sightings, no validated sightings of ICE on campuses or anywhere else in Sonoma County. But they are set to bring school resource officers back to the high schools, and they're justifying it because there was someone that was stabbed at a local high school. A little over a year ago, and they're saying that if the cops were there, that there wouldn't have been a stabbing. So,
and what kind of we were just talking with a ninth grader, a young man you probably know, and you know, I said, if you had a chance to talk to Trump, what would you tell him or ask him? And he'd say, like, what? Why hate? What do you get from hate? That's pretty powerful. But there really needs to be practical infrastructure for people to protect themselves. Or is that happening? Is there that kind of collaboration going on now? People being prepared, knowing what to do, what not to do when ICE arrives or whoever?
Yeah. Most definitely. Sonoma County has a strong organizing history. There's the North Bay Organizing Project that has organized the Immigrant Defense Network, which is partially responsible for creating the Rapid Response, Immigrant Defense Task Force, that created the Rapid Response Network. There's multiple organizations that are organizing grassroots movements with workers. There's a strong farm worker movement here, especially vineyard workers, that's being led by North Bay Jobs with Justice. So there's strong organizing that's happening here in Sonoma County, without a doubt.
Beautiful.
More so than other areas, without a doubt. And the youth that we're working with are a lot of them are children of farm workers and vineyard workers. Children of immigrant students, and Bo that you spoke with is a young black man.
Beautiful. Well, we appreciate you for the good work you're doing there, and we hope we can keep this dialogue going, because we want to let people know what's happening, and I think a great way to fight fear is with knowledge and listening to the folks who have something to say. Thanks for being
That's
with
right.
us. Maybe you can put the phone, give the phone back to Gavilan, and we will talk to you soon. Again, we appreciate you.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis, for the work you do. Here's here's Miguel.
Dennis?
Yes, Gavilan. We've got about a minute left, so... yeah. What's going on?
Just basically just telling folks that support your immigrant community. They're a labor force in this country that do essential and sometimes the most difficult, hard, and dangerous work to make sure that people have food on the table, from vegetables, fruits, grains, to meat, to fish, to it all. These are agricultural workers. And, you know, they also do other labor. Support your immigrant community, because one thing that's coming out here clear is that this is a labor issue. Yes, it's immigrant communities, but they're part of a labor force. And absolutely, some of the signs, Dennis, that I keep seeing is arrest Elon Musk. One student had a thing that said, arrest Musk. He is burning the Constitution. He's not even a U.S.-born citizen. He's a foreigner. He's an immigrant. Arrest him. That's students. Arrest. These are young high school students. I saw four of these different, more or less, saying the same message.
Amazing. All right. Well, Gavilan, thanks for being out there. This is your backyard. And this is a very old and continuing story for you. Thank you for being with us. Be safe. We'll see you at the mothership very soon. Take care. Peace.
See you somewhere.
That's it for Flashpoints. That's Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, by the way. KPFA.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation.